We'll call a meeting of the Agriculture and Rural Development Committee to order. Going to be a real treat today to hear about Minnesota-grown wine products, Minnesota wineries and such. Just a real positive story as far north as we are here in Minnesota. This is an informational hearing only, no voting today as we hear about the wine industry in our state. We have several testifiers. Let's call up first Paula Marty from Morgan Creek Vineyard. Is Paula here? Welcome. We have more members coming there in other committees, and they'll be coming in and out as the day goes on, so we'll start, get underway.
Am I being called here?
Yes, you sit at the testifiers table, and please identify yourself for the record, ma'am.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can everybody hear me? Actually, I was planning to go last, but that's okay. We can do the... narrative part first, and the statistical.
Do you have a different order you'd like to go
in?
No.
Okay. That'd be fine. My name is Paula Marty. My husband George Marty and I got into this business about 20 years ago, just last month in 1993. We planted our first 3 acres of vineyards, and in Minnesota, of course, that was unheard of. There were only very few people that had any grapes in the ground in Minnesota at all. And so this, we really represented that 2.5% of the entrepreneurial spirit in Minnesota that would even take something as crazy as growing grapes in Minnesota on. There were only 4 other wineries open in the state. At that time, we were the 5th. We began growing grapes, and none of them were cold hardy varietals that were available from the University of Minnesota. None of those had been released yet. That came 4 years later, 3 years later. So we weren't able to begin our efforts with cold hardy varietals that would be at least somewhat assured they would survive in the 40 degree below weather, which is what we need to plan for in Minnesota. We're called a hostile climate, and that's what they're striving for when they developed these grapes at the university. Was the test temperatures were down to 35, 40 below. However, when we began our business, there were not those options available. We contacted forgot his name. He's a biologist from University of Minnesota Mankato, and he wrote one of the seminal books in growing fruit in the Midwest, and it was Don Gordon. Thanks, guys. Don Gordon said, the first thing you need to do if you're going to grow grapes in Minnesota is to contact the Minnesota Grape Growers Association. And we had no idea that there was an association at that time, which I believe had only about 280 members. Currently, the association boasts about 800, I believe, members. So it has significantly grown over the 20-year period since we began growing grapes 20 years ago between New Ulm and Mankato. We happen to think that's one of the best regions in the state of Minnesota to be growing grapes in the Minnesota River Valley. So we had great hope for not only good location, good soil, but also more moderate temperatures around the river and in southern Minnesota. My husband is a member of the Augustshell Brewing family. So when we started growing grapes, it didn't take him very long to decide we better make wine. So for him, it was not a daunting task to start fermentation and pump fluids at great distances and that sort of thing, because he had been doing it for, of course, over 100 years with the Augustshell Brewing Company, and he worked for many years at the brewery. So we got a good leg up and got started, but it really wasn't until about 1996, where the university released its first cold hardy grape varietal, that we were able to start planting varieties that could survive the winter. Up until that point, and it's actually been until this year, we still have French hybrids in our vineyard that require a lot of extra work for winter protection, which is really commercially not viable in the state. And I know early on my husband was pressing Peter Hempstead from the University of Minnesota Grape Breeding Program to please start releasing some of these things that you've been doing research for 25, 30 years on, so we can start experimenting with them also in our vineyards. And Peter Hempstead then began releasing actually quite a few grape varietals within a number of years. By 2000, we had, well, it was actually 2003, I believe, we had at least three varietals that were available for Minnesota viticulturists who are interested in planting vineyards to get some grapes in the ground. And as soon as that started taking off, it really was a relief to many of the few winemakers in the state, because up to that point we did not have many Minnesota grown grapes in the ground. We were sourcing grapes and fruit from New York, from California, from Oregon, from Washington State, other places around the country that are known for their viticulture, their grape quality, and their juices. And we were bringing them in. And we do have to abide by a law that says, a Minnesota state requirement, that we grow 51% of our product in Minnesota, and the remaining 49% can come from then out. We can outsource that. However, in the very early days, getting 51% of your mass product assembled was quite a challenge, let me tell you. And when we transitioned from French hybrids and German hybrids into the Minnesota cold varietals, it took a number of years. So we were making our first investment in the vineyard at about $3,000, $3,500 an acre then. I think it's probably gone up since then. And then when we finally put our business plan together to open a winery in 1996, we began that business plan. We went to our local banker and said, we are very interested in opening a winery now that there are grapes in Minnesota that we can grow. And Roger, our banker at Cortland State Bank, said, grapes? Well, I do corn, beans, cattle, and hogs. I've never heard of grapes. I don't think this would be a good idea. And we had brought him a bottle of wine, of our wine, thinking that we could convince him. And my husband discreetly tucked that bottle of wine away, and we walked away because there was just no openness to this at all. We went out and sought help from AURI. I think you're all familiar with that. AURI, along with our Region 9 Development Commission, we spoke to the finance people there. We came back then to our banker with an AURI package, a Region 9 Development Commission loan, and also partially bank-funded, but we took the banking advice from the expertise that we had gotten from the Region 9 Development Commissioner, and put the bank's piece of this pie into a trifecta sort of partnership. And when she came back with us to the banker and started presenting the cash flow and looking at the potential for this, our banker started sitting closer and closer to the edge of his chair and was very interested in hearing more. So we've kept our banker happy now for 13 years, we have a great relationship with him. We do get a little short between January and February, or February, March, April, like most farmers do, but we're slipping nicely into an agriculture pattern where we're setting up our loans in the spring for our bottles and cost of goods supplies. We're paying our harvest off in the fall. We're seeing up to 100,000 pounds, 50 tons of grapes that are coming in from us. Morgan Creek Vineyards contract grows with 14 growers and sometimes up to 20-some growers with smaller people bringing fruit in. So we're seeing a lot more activity happen just within the last 10 years. So this is our 13th season. We've developed a season that markets our product. I am very interested in education, not only from the aspect of the agricultural endeavor that we're involved in. As I see it, we are four businesses. We are first an ag business. We are second a manufacturing business. We are third a wholesale business, and fourth a retail business. So we fit into many different agencies in our region. We cut into not only marketing endeavors but also the wholesale industry. Our proximity is really very key to us. We are in a city that has five trucking firms, and we are very have great access with our transportation to juices coming in from out of state to New Ulm. as well as our products going out. So the proximity of our transportation is a critical issue. We're very involved in economic development in the Mankato region and marketing in the Mankato region. I'm a past president or past secretary of the Minnesota Farm Winery Association, which was a new organization that began in 2006, actually, it started. And it was a split sort of between the two groups, Minnesota Grape Growers Association and the Minnesota Farm Wine Association. We have two agencies now that work together to present legislative action and also to solve our own problems in the industry and, of course, to market and develop our industry. So things have moved along really quite rapidly since 2000, and you're going to be seeing and hearing, I think, a lot of interesting things happen around the state.
Ms. Marty, if I could interrupt for just a second.
Sure.
You talked about the four parts of your business, growing, wholesale, retailing.
Yes.
As you look back, which was the most difficult to establish? I've heard that finding a market and developing a market is extremely difficult. Did you find that to be true?
No. My background is in marketing. We are in an ideal location between Mankato and New Ulm. And so we have been, I think, fortunate, and a number of the wineries around the Twin City area are a little more fortunate than those that are further outstate. So access, of course, I do two radio programs for the last 2 years. Our radio programs have been all about education and outreach, and that marketing has been so successful. I can't say enough about that kind of outreach. We also have done marketing now at the Minnesota State Fair. We, for a number of years, we've had a booth at the State Fair in the Ag Hort building. That has allowed hundreds of thousands of people to see a little bit of what's happening in the Minnesota Farm Winery. We also have a new event called Savor Minnesota at Canterbury Park. Those are two huge marketing events to the community, and I think the community at large wants to know more. I think getting out there is not as difficult as changing the attitude. We need to change attitudes about Minnesota being a wine center, and we look to your help for doing that. We need to create not only education about what we're doing, we need to create more outreach. We need to invite people to our wineries, develop that hospitality so that they can see the importance to the, again, the crosscut of the economic impact of wineries in our regions. Since we opened our winery in southern Minnesota, we were the first to be granted a land use permit in southern Minnesota, the first by a county, and it was very difficult getting through some of that regulation. I'm happy to say now there will be eight of us just around the New Ulm Mankato area in the next couple of years. We, in that little hub, are going to be, I think, the strongest region in the state very soon, not only because of the unique bend of the river kind of effect, but we have a strong ag community down there, and there's a lot of interest in seeing grapes as an alternative crop. So,
very good. Thank you.
Yep.
Any more questions from members? Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Ms. Marty.
Good morning.
We go back a few years.
Yes.
So I just wanted to thank you for coming in today.
Thank you for the invitation.
And talking about wine. Just want to let you know that I've ordered my first 50 vines this year.
Yeah.
to try my hand at it. But
wonderful. Well, we'll be looking to pay you a premium if you bring those by.
All okay. Right. Well, I hope I get good at it.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome to Mrs. Marty.
Hello.
Thank you so much for coming to the Capitol today and telling us your story, and it's a great story. I've been to the winery a number of times.
Thank
and,
you, yes.
You do a wonderful, wonderful work out there, and you've described the multifaceted approach you've used to market your products and mm-hmm. attract people to the winery, and I congratulate you on all those efforts. You've done a great job. And also want to emphasize how important it is that the work that was done at the University of Minnesota is really what's made this industry
yes.
viable here in the state of Minnesota.
Absolutely.
And congratulations to mm-hmm. them, and thanks to them for seeing this as an important effort that really benefits all of us in greater Minnesota. So.
Absolutely. I concur with that 100%. We've been very grateful for that assistance. We have been involved in putting a wine together with a chef from downtown Minneapolis at the Radisson. Chef Paul Lynch from Fire Lake Grill House and the university participated in that as consultants. They were a wonderful resource to the chef and a wonderful resource for us to do that. and it, that's that additional step in marketing that we need as well. But without the research there for the cold hardy grape varietals, there wouldn't be a story in Minnesota. We would not be unique. That is our story. The cold hardiness, the cold climate, that's who we are, that's what we have. We need to embrace that, get good at it, and strengthen it, and I think learn to take step up and take our place in the wine world. Now that we are part of one of the largest wine regions in the United States, I think there's just great potential for Minnesota. I think we need to just not be so conservative about it. I think we need to speak out more and blow our horn a little more about what's going to be happening, I think, down the road in a few years.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just blowing our horn a little bit, and I appreciate the opportunity. And I did at one time have two wineries in my district, but Fieldstone decided to move their headquarters to Redwood Falls. So they moved just outside of my district, although I've been to their facilities, both their old and new facilities, many times, and they also do a great job, and congratulations to them. And also, I think it's important to highlight the importance of the Marty family in our region, both with the second oldest family, family-owned brewery in the country, and Shell's Brewery, and now with the great success of the Morgan Creek Winery. It's a wonderful story and one that does attract people to our region, and we all appreciate that. So thanks again for coming to the Capitol.
Thank you.
And well, you should toot the horn of that area. Representative Anderson Bruce.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, welcome, Mrs. Marty. I appreciate you coming. I started in very interested in grapes for a long time, and I only have a half acre, so I don't. I have a few vines in the backyard, and I got my brother making wine for me. So, but question for you. I guess going back to your comments of University of Minnesota and bringing out those extra cold hardy or releasing those varieties. Any word on that when that's happening in your conversations with the university? And then I have another question to follow.
Mrs. Marty.
Any word on what's happening with that? You mean currently or?
Correct.
I can say this much. The research that's been ongoing has been, I think, according to my husband anyway, right on track in terms of the wine styles that the grape breeding program is producing. We also have wine styles that are coming out of the Elmer Swenson history in the state, which is very important as well. And Elmer has a completely different wine style. And I can only speak from our own perspective and my own husband's viewpoint as a winemaker. He feels that the university wine styles are much more mainstream and closer to the European styles than the Elmer Swenson varietals. However, the Elma Swenson varietals do have a very strong, popular appeal. They're a simpler, more of a farm wine style, very floral. Most of them are very floral. So there is a distinctive characteristic that makes them different with food than what the university is developing. So I have heard my husband say, and we do tours at our winery. We're very committed to education. We do 2 days of tours, 1 to 4 on the hour, and we train our staff to do it. And we talk a lot about these cold hardy varietals and what that means, because that is our story in the state. And that is one of the things that we do emphasize, is that these wines that are being developed by the university have an appeal to be working in the mainstream with chefs, with food, as the cuisine element begins to partner with our wine industry. And we're very excited about seeing that happen as well.
Thank you.
Follow-up, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In your experience last 20 years, I know that in my just having four or five plants in my backyard, I've experienced some troubles with, other than the cold hardiness and the animals out there, the rabbits like the monkey one. But what, in your experience, did you have trouble with as far as in your vast years of growing these grapes? Did you have as your major problem with grapes?
Well, it's very interesting that you bring up animals, because it was not one thing that we thought about. And we live along the Morgan Creek, which is a tributary to the Minnesota River Valley. All of that is deep deer territory. I live in the Cambria area, which is huge for hunting. Deer are a huge problem for eating the primary buds of grapes. One of the huge helps that we got early on, again, because of our research and the education that was provided through the Minnesota Grape Growers Association, was to we became very involved in the DNR's fencing program. They had a program that they had done about 20 years of research on. The fencing program was used at the Arboretum, Minnesota Arboretum as well. And so when we heard about this, we had a consultant come in. He looked at our 3 acres and he said, yep, this is what you need to do. You need to do the 4-foot slant fence. And if you establish this fence, you will not have any deer problems. So I did one other thing. I did dog research, and I made sure I had a dog that goes after furry critters so that it would take care of raccoons and those sort of things. And that's really that was the combo. We only had one breach of our fence. Only one, and you also had to have a designated shooter. So if you would shoot that deer, it wouldn't come back and teach the other deer to come in. Since we've established that fence, we've had no breaches after that one early on, and we've been able to leave our fence open and maintain the vineyard. I know that animal damage is huge, especially starting with deer in the early spring eating the buds. A second problem is birds, and they say that birds can come in and clean out about 3/4 of a ton of grapes in an hour. And I've seen it happen in our own vineyard. After that point, we began netting. We net 3 acres of vineyards so that we can protect our investment. We have to. There's just no other way to do it. It's a little work, you know, to do it. There are systems to put it on and off fairly easily, but those were two of the biggest things, I think, the animal issues. The other would be, in terms of the challenges of all those areas, I think the financial commitment. I wanted to make one other point. I think that when we started in 20 years ago, the financial commitment was not as significant as it is now for more people that are coming in on the deal now. However, we're not seeing the entrepreneurs come in now, which tells me there must be something good going on in this industry, because I'm starting to see major investors coming in on this group. And I know in the Mankato region, we've got multiple businesses looking at multiple investors coming in partners. So that wasn't our story. Our story was pitch and struggle and make it grow conservatively. But for us to see others come in with that kind of confidence, that only is assuring to us that, you know, that this industry is in fact growing. The other thing I wanted to say was that, you know, this industry is really built on these few pioneers that did it all on their own shoulders with really not a lot of help. Some education from MGGA, but all the risk. You know, we put together a plan with 3 financing agencies and made a huge investment of our personal lives. But we did it all on our own shoulders and stuck to it and made it work. There wasn't a lot of other help, resources, or even bankers that were really willing to part with their money to make investment 20 years ago.
We have one more question from Representative Keegan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just wondering if you produce ice wine. It seems that there's a niche maybe there. Trying to think of ways that maybe Minnesota wine could stand out from other wines around the country or around the world. And I understand that really fetches a premium price.
It does. It catches a premium price. We do make 2 wines in an ice wine style. Our Black Ice, Minnesota Black Ice, an appropriate name, and Sweet E, both from Minnesota varietals, the La Crescent grape and the Frontenac Gris grape, make beautiful ice wines. However, we do not take the risk to allow the grapes to freeze on the vine, which is what brings the premium price. All ice wines must be documented. Every region has some sort of rules and ethics by which they document the way it's frozen from 8 to 12 hours. Missouri has the same, even though it doesn't get that cold down there. They don't hit ice nights where it stays frozen 8 to 12 hours very often. So when they do get that, then what they do is they pick it, they harvest it while it's still frozen. The ice concentrates the waters and also concentrates the fruit flavors. And then as it's crushed, you remove the water away from it in the form of ice, and you take out the extract of essences, which makes that a much higher sugar And the fermentation for that, of course, then provides a little higher alcohol as well, and it makes it a beautiful wine. What we do, because we can't afford to risk that crop every year, we harvest our grapes at the regular Brix level or sugar level that's required for the ultimate flavor profile for that particular grape. And then we siphon off what we're going to need and make into our regular wines. And we pump off whatever George estimates we will be making for ice wine into 55-gallon drums, and they're hauled away to deep freeze. And so they're frozen immediately as juice, and then when we're ready to make the wine, we begin thawing that out, and we pull away all of the extracted concentrated juices, and there again we leave the water behind in the form of this big block of ice that's left in the 55-gallon drum. The sugar readings are usually up in the 40s rather than down in the 20s, so it's like doubled. And we begin working with the product and start the fermentation at that point. I don't know if that would be a niche for us per se, because it's not a true ice wine. We get enough, if we get enough cold days in early September, mid-September, when some of our varieties are ready to pick, it could be optimum, but you got to wait for the weather regardless. So it's a risk. It's very high risk.
Thanks, Mrs. Marty. Very interesting, and thank you for your testimony
thank
this
you.
Morning. As the next testifier comes up, Mark Wedge from Fieldstone Vineyards, the Representative Eakin, could you approve the minutes, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I would like to make an amendment to the minutes.
Go ahead.
Where the signature is, the first signature line underneath where it says Representative Rod Hamilton, comma, Chair, it should read Representative Paul Anderson.
So that is the amendment by Representative Eakin. All in favor of the amended amendment change, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. So then would you approve that?
And I will, Mr. Chair, move the minutes as amended.
Thanks, Representative. All in favor of the minutes as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes approved. Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Wedge, Fieldstone Vineyards.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members.
Identify yourself for the record, please.
Mark Wedge, Fieldstone Vineyards, Redwood Falls, Minnesota. If it is all right, we have John Maloney go first, and we're going to give an overview of the industry and where things are going financially and growth and all those things.
Welcome. Please identify yourself, sir.
Morning, everyone. My name is John Maloney, and my wife and I own the Cannon River Winery down in Cannon Falls, Minnesota. And just a little bit about that first. We started the vineyard back in 2001. We bought a parcel of ground down in Goodhue County and established a 20-acre vineyard down there. And we opened up our winery in the fall of 2004 to coincide with our first harvest. That year we harvested 8 tons of fruit. And last year's harvest, we harvested about 54 tons of fruit. So at full maturity, that vineyard, we grow 10 different varieties of some of these cold hardy wine grapes, all 4 of the University of Minnesota released varieties. And eventually at full maturity, we'll produce between 60 and 75 tons of fruit from that 20-acre parcel of ground. And then we also work with other key growers throughout the state and bring in product. But currently we employ about 30 people at the winery and in the vineyard. And we're part of 2 wine trails, the Great River Road Wine Trail and the Three Rivers Wine Trail. I want to say a little bit about the University of Minnesota's varieties, because I tell people all the time that what the University of Minnesota has done for our apples that we all know and love, like Fireside and Honeycrisp and all those, that's what they're really starting to do with the cold hardy wine grape industry. And they are really the go-to institution throughout the country for some of this cold hardy breeding. But Mark and I sit on the legislative committee of the MGGA, and one of our objectives that we, and this committee really began in earnest a little over a year ago, and one of our objectives that we set forth in the first year was to really develop and work on an awareness campaign and start telling our story to the rest of the state. So this opportunity fit in really well with what we're trying to accomplish, and I want you to know we really appreciate that. And I know Representative Szymanski was at the Cold Climate Conference back in February that the grape growers put on. And from there, we've also got the summer annual picnic coming up, and that's another, it's an entire industry event. It'll be at a vineyard, probably, it sounds like it's going to be at St. Croix Vineyards operation, which is over near Stillwater, Minnesota. So we will be sending you out an invitation to that as well, and then you can come out in the field and actually see what the heck we're all about. And it's just an all-day long event, and there's some educational component to it, but it's really it's a picnic, so, and it's generally well attended by a lot of the people in the industry, so we're going to welcome all legislators to that as well, and you'll be getting an invitation to that. So what I'm going to do, I'm just going to let Mark, we put together a few facts and figures about the industry and how we're growing and how we're moving along here, and he's going to touch on some of those.
Mr. Wedge, go ahead.
Thank you. Again, I'm with Fieldstone Vineyards in Redwood Falls, Minnesota. We have we started in 2000 with our vineyard and the winery in 2003. One of the sheets that you have in front of you is the graphs. It starts in 2003 because I'm the one doing the research, and that's when it started to matter to me. We currently work with 29 contract growers. We have about 48 acres under vine within that grower network. I'm not positive, but I think we're probably one of the largest. We have one of the largest number of independent growers that is under contract with us, and that really started when we started operating with a very small renewable ag grant in 2000. Part of that three-year plan was an educational component where we had to do field days. So we had a lot of people wondering, you know, why are you trying to grow posts in the ground and come out and learn what a vineyard was about, and that really spawned a lot of growers for us. But you can see from that chart, from 2003, and of course Paul and George Marty started when numbers were much smaller than this, the growth that we've had, and the 2010 numbers actually just came in. You can see in 2009 we produced, as an industry, just over 93,000 gallons. 2010, we are at approximately 125,000 gallons. So you can see a substantial growth. That's obviously thanks to the privileges that we have within the Farm Winery Statute and to our retail partners that carry our product on their shelf, and I imagine most of them are MMBA and MLBA members. So without their help, we wouldn't be able to do this. There is, with our growth, there's also substantial revenue growth for you guys. And against the 125,000 gallons sold in 2010, it's about $725,000 in excise and I don't know if it's appropriate, what we lovingly refer to as the sin tax, the additional. So, and I would imagine by 2012, we'll probably cross $1 million mark on that.
Mr. Wedge, is your market primarily in Minnesota, your retail market?
I would say, well, in our case, yes, it's our case is somewhat unique. We're a little bit geographically challenged as far as population bases go. So while it wasn't necessarily part of our original business plan, what it has morphed into over the last 7 years is one of the largest by percent uses of the wholesale channels, where most wineries are maybe doing 30 or 40, possibly 50% wholesale. Over the last 5 years, we've been doing closer to 60 or 70% wholesale, and it's partly by virtue of where we're at geographically. We made a move a year ago into downtown Redwood Falls. Our hoping to gain maybe 10 points on the retail number, and it's showing that and more. But our commitment is still certainly for education for the people that walk into our door and to hopefully have them leave with a bottle of wine, but very much with the wholesale channels as well. So specifically to your question, I would say we're probably 90%. We do get South Dakota traffic, and we've shipped to, I shouldn't say shipped to, we have had within our doors a representative of nearly every state in the union and some half dozen countries.
Continue on.
John? I don't know that I have a whole lot more. I just wanted to emphasize the growth track. 2008, you can see there was a small setback, but we have bounced back from there. And to the best of my knowledge, either this month or next, we should have 35 wineries with their doors open. There may be one or two more that I'm not aware of. I think if you were to ask the Commissioner of Public Safety, he would tell you that there's 44 farm winery licenses owned. So the growth is huge. And when we started in 2003 with our winery, we were number 10 or 11.
Any questions from members of the panel or members of the audience? Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry I was out of the room for most of your testimony, but both of you are involved in the wine production.
Correct.
Right.
My question is, are we aging wine in oak barrels yet, or is oak barrel production essential to Minnesota wineries? Do we have a producer in Minnesota, or... if you are using oak barrels at all, where do they come from?
Mr. Maloney or Mr. Wedge?
I'd be happy to take that.
Mr. Wedge.
You can tell them how you guys do it.
We are on a barrel program, though it is relatively new. We've only been using oak barrels for 3 years. There is a Minnesota Cooper up in Avon, Minnesota, the barrel mill. Currently, we're not using their product in barrel form. However, I do use oak adjuncts from them, and they're called infusion spirals. So they are Minnesota white. Well, actually, what we use in the past is Minnesota white oak. However, they carry a number of species and nationalities. They are available in similar toast levels and are aged as barrel staves would be. In our case, actually, a week and a half ago, I had an opportunity to taste wine from a barrel producer. It's a Minnesota winery, but he happens to have seven different barrels that he was using, so we got to go and do a tasting. They ranged from Minnesota white oak to half Minnesota, half French, half Appalachian, half French, all Appalachian. And my favorite of that was the Minnesota French blend. It was very nice. So as far as number of wineries using oak barrels, there are, I would say, more than half, but using oak alternatives is extremely popular as well. Depends upon what you're trying to achieve with your fermentation techniques.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just thought as long as we're expanding wineries, we might expand the oak barrel business in Minnesota as well.
I had a question. You know, most agricultural commodities involve some risk in growing them. What would a frost in late May or August do to wine production in a general sense?
Well, we're going to find that out this year. as you know, Mother's
Mr.
Day
Wedge.
Frost last year, which is not abnormal, but the March and April we had really set some things back. So there was probably a higher percentage of juice and or fruit brought in from out of state for the 2010 vintage. And I can speak for our winery. We were down, over 40% in our production. While we certainly respect and want to encourage always maintaining that 51%, Minnesota grown, because I think it's who we are, it's our identity. It's good to know that there is a cushion, and there are waivers in place where if we have a catastrophic spring like we did last year, those safety nets are there.
Mr. Maloney, comment?
Yeah, I can comment on that, too. Last year was really a challenging year, and what happened was that March and April that we had were just fantastically warm and wonderful for everybody, but we had bud break at our vineyard by the 23rd of April, and we had shoots that were 6 to 8 inches tall by the time Mother's Day came around. And this year, to give you an idea, we don't even have bud break in the vineyard. So it's the other end of the spectrum this year as far as averages go. Generally, bud break will be that first week of May, but when Mother's Day frost came last year, it really hurt a lot of growers, and our vineyard was one of the few that survived it because we're on a big, high, south-facing hill, and that cold air pools into the bottom of valleys. It's heavier than the warm air, and we just barely got by, and we did not have any bud damage to our primary buds, and it's the primaries that produce the fruit. So the vine survives. It'll send up secondary shoots and tertiary shoots, but it's really it's just producing canopy and vegetation at that point. We thought there would only be about 10-15% of fruit production on those secondaries, and I guess a lot of growers had 25-30% production, but nonetheless, it really did hurt individual vineyards' harvests last year. So, you know, one of the lessons in that is that this isn't, this alternative type of agriculture isn't going to be broadcast throughout the entire state, but there are key regions and key areas where it can really be a wonderful use of the land. So,
are your plants irrigated?
No. Generally, in Minnesota, we really don't need to irrigate. You know, artificial irrigation is just not necessary. We get enough annual precipitation through our growing season that that's just not necessary.
Any further questions? Representative Mr. Birthday Boy Swazinski.
All right. Mike, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wedge, I just wanted to welcome you to Ag Committee and thank you for taking the time to come up. As your representative, you know, the good city of Redwood Falls have had an opportunity to come down and come to your business and also see your grape stomp and those things. And what a wonderful addition that adds to the city of Redwood Falls. Just one general question, kind of with the integration of the business a little bit. You know, obviously, you know, from a grape grower to a winemaker, there is some integration. You have a lot of small growers that maybe have a small plot. How much work have you been doing, you know, as far as, you know, trying to get certain varieties to be grown so that you have access to that market? You know, how does that process, you know, being a, you know, a kind of a growing business in the state, and, you know, tell me a little bit about that as far as those struggles and whatever.
Mr. Wedge.
Sure. Thanks. Good to see you again. Marquette, as many of you are familiar with, was the latest University of Minnesota hybrid release. Truly took on a life of its own. And John and I were talking earlier trying to figure out if we could approximate how many acres were in the ground. There was an economic impact study done in 2007, which suggested about 1,200 acres at that point. And that was really before Marquette really hit. I think we can tell you it's somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 acres now. Some will tell you more, and frankly, we don't have a pinpoint on that. The way it works in a perfect world, hopefully, somebody's interested in growing and they'll contact a winery first on the front end before they make that investment and see what the winery is looking for. The winery's been in business a few years. They've already have some styles that they've kind of naturally progressed into or fallen into, and they know what their customer base is. I think that was probably very common 7 years ago, and what we've seen in the past 3 years is a higher number of homeless growers. They're planting on spec. They think, wow, this is a trend, it's taking off, it's great, there's plenty of wineries. And they're planting, not necessarily considering the logistics of that third year harvest or that fifth or sixth year harvest when it's you know, substantial. How far are they taking it? And did they happen to plant something that the winery is interested, the winery that's closest to them is interested in? So, I mean, these are things that the MGGA is constantly working on, trying to train, or not train, but educate prospective growers. But, I, you know, and to Paula's point earlier, with it seems like more investment capital coming into the state, there's more and more people that are growing on spec, and, you know, we try as an industry very hard to always find a home for those folks. I get dozens of calls in August. Somebody's had 3 years to market, and now they're calling me in August looking for a home in 30 days. And fortunately, the only thing that's saving those people right now is the number of new wineries coming on. So I can pick the phone, find out where they're at, and start making calls on their behalf, or I know who's looking, and I give them three options. You know, these three are less than 100 miles away. Hopefully you can find a home with one of these people.
Follow-up, Representative?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much for your testimony, Mr. Wedge and Mr. Maloney, and congratulations on your success.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Tammy Bredesen from Carlos Creek Wineries up in the Alexandria area.
I don't believe Tammy is here today.
Okay. Then we have the chairman of the Grape Growers. Okay. Brenda, and I apologize here, Brenda, Visnevec, Lakeville Municipal Liquor Store, is that somewhat close? Welcome to our committee, and identify yourself with your correct pronunciation for the record, please.
Okay. Brenda Visnevec.
And I was close.
Yes, you were very close. And I represent the Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association and the Lakeville Municipal Liquor Stores.
My name is Jennifer Schoenzeit. I represent the MLBA, and my family owns Zips Liquor Store, and I'm one of the owners.
Go ahead.
Well, we're here today basically to commend the grape growers for their work and what they've done to date. As partners, as retail partners, they have been not only educators, they've been promoters, they've been tour guides, you name it, they've worked with us. And I'm not sure if they'll appreciate this comment, but 10 years ago in our liquor stores, we had a very small section of Minnesota wines, and the people that would come in and look for those wines were basically somebody traveling through the state that just said, we want to prove that Minnesota makes wines. So it was almost like a tourist commodity. It has come leaps and bounds in just 10 years. It's been a phenomenal partnership. We've done everything, you know, our wine section now is a full 24 feet of just Minnesota wines. We work with several of the vineyards from up in Bemidji, Fieldstone, Cannon River Winery. We've done video shoots for our cable TV program of the Minnesota wineries and the events going on within them. We've done tours for our employees because basically the winemaking standards and procedures are no different here in Minnesota than they are in the best regions of France. So it's really a wonderful tool for us to get our employees involved in and see how things are done. And they've always been extremely accommodating to us. But I think the biggest change I see, because they've always been great people to work with, but the biggest thing I see is they're getting top-rated medals. I mean, we have a medal in our store from one of these wineries that they kind of loaned and put on the bottle that won it. But they're getting accolades, national accolades now, for having really, really good wines. And there are wines that they are now producing that literally they come into our store and within a month they're sold out. It's a great problem to have for us. And then in addition, there's several other partnerships with the Minnesota Municipal Beverage Association. They are coming up and attending our conference here in 2 weeks, so kind of educating the general retailers. And then in addition, they're also coming to our Taste of Lakeville on Thursday evening, in which we have 1,200 people. But we have kind of a wine tasting competition there, and we had to open up a Minnesota market. And then also in the fall, they're going to come to our art festival event, one of the wineries, and actually pour wines. And that was actually generated by a comment, because it's kind of a local art festival. And the comments received over the past 2 years were resoundingly in favor of having Minnesota-only wines there. And that was by the customers. That wasn't by the promoters or the chair people. That was actually by the customers saying, let's support local. So,
Ms. Schoenzett, any comments?
No, thank you for having us. Our wine sales are driven by our customers, and our customers are asking more and more and more for education. So we're using them at our tastings, at our samplings, and it's amazing the customer awareness, because that's how we choose, you know, to pick our battles. And we're a very local business, and the amount in the last 5 years is crazy. So we just wanted to thank them, and just if we can help spread the word, you know. It's great when the customers come in and ask, and it makes us go out and do more research and bring more in.
So in your opinion, do you see this Minnesota-grown market expanding in the future?
I definitely do. I mean, when you look at the latitude, longitude, we are no different, really, than the same geographical distinctions as France. We might have a little harsher winters because we aren't next as close to an ocean proximity. But with what the University of Minnesota has done, and again, great educators. I could have listened to Paul all day here, but they've actually embraced us and have taught us about how the differences are with the Minnesota wines and how they're producing them to be of good quality. I don't see this train stopping. I see only positives.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions from members of the panel? For our testifiers. Mr. Representative Szymanski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the ladies. Just a question about somewhat the availability, but one of the wineries that I visited last fall, we talked about, you know, the pricing at the winery, you know, when they have it available to their customers that come out there versus selling it to a wholesaler. Do you see any conflict there where the wholesalers are, you know, trying to reduce the margins for the wine producers, or are you willing to pay what the wine producers are asking for their product?
Ms. Visnabek.
I think the quality has improved. We have no problem with what the wineries are asking for their wines. It's that comparable. Yeah, if you're spending $15 on a nice bottle of Minnesota wine, it's as good as any California wine in the system. And, you know, there are better quality ones, Minnesota wines, but they all have a little bit different flair. I mean, there's some that are very fruit-oriented or based off of fruit, like cranberries and apples, and there are some that are typical, you know, a nice hearty red that pairs well with food. So they've got so much diversity that I think it's beneficial to the industry as a whole. I mean, it not only affects grapes, but it affects blueberries and rhubarb and everything. So,
follow up, Representative Szymanski.
Just to let the ladies know, I'm an apple grower, and we've been able to amateurly produce some apple wines, and you know, one day we'll get good at it, and we may be in the marketplace as well. But I have talked to other wineries that do like to, you know, blend the various Minnesota fruits into their wines, and I think that's just a terrific compliment to the variety of things that we can produce here in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Anderson Bruce.
To the testifiers, ladies, do you sell any of, Ms. Marty mentioned earlier, like an ice wine or a black ice, I think that she mentioned. Is there any response to customers asking for that?
Yeah, we definitely.
Ms. Viskovic.
We definitely did over this past year, and I can't recall what the retail price was, but it was like a 375 bottle, and it retailed $40 or so. $40. We sold out. And again, once someone tries it and the quality's there, they don't care where it comes from. They want quality, so they will definitely pay for quality Minnesota wines.
Follow-up, Representative.
Mr. Chair, while I was in the Air Force Reserves, I was stationed in Ramstein, Germany, and they had a market fair or something similar to art fair or things like that in Germany, and they had what they call ice wine there, and it was basically what Mrs. Marty just said about how you harvest the wine as it's frozen, things like that. They were selling bottles of ice wine, just small bottles, just probably that big around, for $120 for a bottle of ice wine. So when you said $40, I said, I think I'm going to come your way.
Yeah, it's liquid gold.
Comment. Thanks. Any other questions for the testifiers? If not, thank you very much for coming this morning. Any other questions from members? Any other testifiers from members of the public? And again, thanks to all of you. Ms. Marty, did you have a comment?
Just one comment?
Why don't you come up to the testifier table, please?
Just a quick comment on your...
We have plenty of time, so...
Your question on the wholesale pricing.
Ms. Marty, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. On the pricing issue, it relates a little bit to this attitude change that you have to prove yourself in order to get this shift to be able to pay for $15 for a bottle of wine when you're competing on the market with $2 Chuck and all these other wonderful California wines that are, they're for sale at $6 a bottle, and then they look at a bottle of Morgan Creek on the shelf for $15.95. Why would a customer pay that $15.95 when they can get a good quality red wine or white wine from California at $6 a bottle? And this is what happened in our experience. Several of the grocery stores that we're working with, specifically Cashwise, they were one of the outlets in New Ulm. I'm speaking just about New Ulm now. That didn't order very much of the Morgan Creek wine, and all the other stores were ordering, 30 cases at a time, 20 cases at a time. And Cashwise was only ordering like maybe three or four. And we were wondering why. Well, what's the deal? What was this attitude thing? We're selling these $6 wines, and that's selling really well, and people prefer those California wines before the Minnesota wines. So, we're not so sure, I don't take that risk. And what started happening, as more people asked for the wines at Cashwise, they did their sales report at the end of the year, and the manager at Cashwise told their buyer, "You buy Morgan Creek wine." And he told my son that, who's our sales director. He said, "Buy Morgan Creek wine because that's the wine we're making the most money on." Because what the California wines are having, what they're paying for California wines, might be less. They're paying a few dollars more for our wine, but the margin for us is much greater. They will make $5 on that bottle rather than $3 on that bottle. And I think you would concur with that, Brenda, with at least some Minnesota wines?
Yeah.
At least ours are locally. They admit to us they're making a larger profit margin on the Minnesota wines than they are on the California wines. So even though they need to have the variety of wines out there, everyone can make a living doing this. Everyone can turn some profit at this the way the industry is slowly growing right now. So that has changed the attitude, at least of the managers in the store, who are looking at the profitability of working with the Minnesota-grown products. So I just wanted to add that.
Ms. Marty, do you have an advertising program, your association, or is it basically a word-of-mouth campaign? Is your wines expand?
When we began our winery, we used a seasonal calendar of events. We market with events primarily, because if we get people to come to our winery and they get to know us, we extend our hospitality to them, they will come back and they will bring a customer. So first, we have to be who we say we are. So we have to be Morgan Creek Vineyards, and whatever that means to our customers, they keep coming back. So that's what we started with. And then beyond that, now we've moved into not only events, we're trying to reduce the events now and expand our market into the metro area. So we've been really moving not only from the website but to all online advertising. We're going also to QR codes, and we're going to be using smartphone advertising on our labels. So that's a big step for us this year, but we think it's really going to pay off, because my customer is 27 to 40 years old. Those customers are the customers that are really connected to mobile marketing. And so I'm sorry, I don't know how it all works, but I better get going, because I've got to get my product on mobile devices. So,
very good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Any other questions from members or from the audience? Any other testifiers? Go ahead, Mr. Maloney. Final comment.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I just I did want to make one comment with regard to the farm winery law, and we've been talking a little bit about wholesale distribution and getting our products out to our retailers and all that. And one of the cornerstones to our legislation that allows us to do this farm winery concept in the state is the ability, or have the privilege, to do wholesaling or to do self-distribution, and that's an absolutely critical component to our success. Most of us that are in the industry agree that when you want to get out and sell your product to retailers, that like members of the MMBA and members of the MLBA, it absolutely works much better when we're out selling the products ourselves. And I employ several people that help with that whole part of our business. And we go out and we build those relationships one at a time and develop them one at a time. And, you know, nobody's as passionate about our products as we are. So it's a really important part of our farm winery law.
Okay, hang on just a second. A question from Representative Swazinski.
Yes, thank you. What's your thought? We've got a few bills coming around. It's not really related to this committee at all, but Sunday sales.
Boy, I have...
Mr. Maloney, go ahead.
I haven't weighed in on that. I really... Minnesota farm wineries are open on Sundays, so we're at it 7 days a week. At our business, we are. But, yeah, you'd have to bring that up to the retailers, really. Yeah.
Representative Ward.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and just a quick comment in closing here. Since I hear and that's a good question, Representative Swinsky, about the Sunday liquors. But having heard the good profitability and wine is growing in the state of Minnesota, and it sounds like it's a good market for everybody. I'm just wondering if by this time next year we'll hear the Szymanski Winery come to fruition, Mr. Chair.
There better be a picture of it, that's for sure.
Samples.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I feel compelled to respond.
You have the floor.
Give me about 4 years, Representative Ward. And we'll see what we can do. Not a promise, but a possible plan. So.
Okay, very
thank
good.
You, Mr. Chair.
Well, thanks to all of our testifiers. It was very interesting. And my final comment, one thing I really think is positive about this industry is the price of land goes up, and young people want to get into farming. It's extremely expensive, and you have to get a lot of land to traditional farm, but this is a way for kids to come back to a family operation. You don't have to have thousands of acres to have a winery. It's intensive work, and they really can build a family business and a lot of employees, so we thank you for that, and it's a real economic plus for our rural areas of Minnesota. So thank you for your industry and the work you do.
Thank you.
A note here for members of the committee, we will be meeting again tomorrow. Again, interesting testimony on raw milk and stray voltage. We have session in the morning, so our schedule is for the Ag Committee to meet at 1 o'clock tomorrow, and it'll be in room 500 South. It's going to be crowded, but that's the only available location. So 500 South at 1 o'clock. We'll hear first from raw milk, and then have maybe shuttle some people in and out, and then hear from stray voltage. So 1 o'clock, or if session runs late, 15 minutes after session ends, session tomorrow in the Ag Committee at 1 o'clock or when session is over. Any other questions or comments from members? If not, meeting is adjourned.